With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Two features on a Thursday morning here at RCR. Perigo's Perspective, Lindsay Perigo. We've heard from Lindsay. And, of course, Money Talks, where we join the dots on money. And our regular guest, Farzan Irani, is back. Farzan, good to have you.
Good morning, mate. Great to be here.
And you're still off, I can say, off the planet again. Some might think you're off the planet. I know you're not. You're out of the country still.
Yeah, I'm still out of New Zealand, mate. I was recently did a trip to Hong Kong, so that was good fun.
Okay, I might ask you about that shortly. I want to concentrate here at home, mainly, if you don't mind, because I just wonder if people understand the full picture. And there's some stories, if you put them together, plus the latest balance sheet from the Reserve Bank, that actually paint quite a tough picture. So let's start, I guess, with what is the most, probably involves the most money. RBNZ figures, latest figures, are showing non-performing housing loans rose by 161 million in January and have increased by 721 million over the past 12 months. Non-performing housing loan ratio hits a 10-year high. I remember talking earlyish last year, and you were saying, watch this space, and now we're looking at it, right? Now we're seeing it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, mate. I had mentioned last year there's something called the lag effect. And as interest rates keep getting higher and people roll off their fixed rate interest rate mortgages, it's going to get more and more difficult for people to service their debt on their mortgages. And yeah, it's just playing out as we said last year. It's a big number if you think about it, right? 161 million in a month and 721 million up in a year. And as I said, this is the year when everything plays out. Because if you think what happened, when did COVID play out? COVID was 2020, when the interest rates started going down. So that two clients who want 2-3-4 year interest rates, which is the most common, are now going to start rolling off. And yeah, we're going to see the fun in that. One thing I just wanted to mention is I've done some calculations of how this could impact the average Kiwi home. If you think about a median New Zealand household income, it's assessed at about 115,000, which I'm being quite generous, but it's a median, right? It's about $115,000. And imagine a person borrowed $1 million for a house back in 2021, which is the average price of a house, and houses were up. They booked it for 3 years, 3-year fixed rate. That's, let's say, about 3-3.5%. They're paying about $4,000 monthly with P&I payments, which is about annual $48K. Now, 48K annual payments towards your mortgage, around 115K income. Come 2024, suddenly those mortgage payments are now 7,000 monthly. That's 84K annual mortgage payments. How are you going to afford that on 150K median income? So now you see why people are going to feel the stress and they won't be able to service their mortgages.
Well, I see that the amount that is represented in what I read out just before is about $1.678 billion. They tell us in an interest.co.nz story here that that's 0.5% of the $350.393 billion outstanding housing loans, which is the highest non-performing ratio seen since 2014, not too long ago. So it's still, percentage-wise, just a fraction. But how fast? Well, they're saying that non-performing loans have rocketed just over 10% in the last year. So, do you expect that to speed up, and that percentage to go up? What, quite a bit in the next year or two? Is that what you're thinking?
Yes, definitely. As I said, as people roll on and come on to higher interest rates, whether they go on to variable or whether they go on to fix, it's going to make no difference. Your 1 year fix, I think, is sitting at 7.25. Your 2 year fixes are sitting at 6.5 upwards. So if you're jumping from 3 to 6.5 or 7, obviously they're going to feel that pain. Nobody's income is double, but their mortgage payments have pretty much doubled. Now they have an option. Do they keep making the minimum payments. As I said, banks extend and pretend. But even with the extend and pretending, it's telling you the non-performing loans have gone up. That is telling you what's happening really on the ground in the New Zealand economy. And your one question out there, again, as I highlighted last year to listeners, I think around September, October, it was last year, they kind of said it was, don't worry, it's only 0.5% of $350 billion. But then they say during the global financial crisis, the number is really high, which is 1.2%. So we're not that far off. But again, they never give you the number, 1.2% of what, right? So you've got to understand how the article is worded. So you think, it's only 0.5% of such a big number. But first of all, they've told you it has been the highest in 10 years, which is common sense because the last time we had the global financial crisis. But they don't give you the bottom line number of what that 1.2% was in 2011.
Well, they're saying that it's less than the global financial crisis, but you know that can be overtaken. It's just sort of starting out, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, speaking to your point about extra mortgage, I'm also reading that the average New Zealand household spending has risen nearly $1,600 a week, according to Stats NZ. Well, where do you find that extra money a week?
This is what I said. It's inflation hitting the average Kiwi or Australian in the pockets. And they just can't make up any more excuses, if I'm being honest. They have to come out and say it's hitting people in the pocket. And some of the stuff I just want to read out, obviously they're saying this has gone up, but if you look at the main contributors to rising costs, I think 2 weeks back when I did my chat, I said that there was an ASB economist who said, yeah, everything's gone up, but look, our local travel costs have gone down. They did the same thing in one of these articles, right? And I just want people to think about this. The main contributor to rising costs in New Zealand, according to these guys, food is up 28.1%, okay? $300 a week.
Sorry, did I hear that right? 28.1?
Yes. So this is it. Your food has gone up almost 30%. I've just told you mortgage has gone up at least 100%. It's doubled.
Yeah.
Food's gone up 28.1%. Utilities are 15.5%. That's another 398 a week. Health is up 18.5, which is 50 a week extra. Transport is up 16.5, which is 252 per week. And they say miscellaneous goods and services, which is your personal car care and credit card and insurance, is 21.6, which I also highlighted. Insurance was going to be up. That's another 139 a week. So that's almost an $800 additional a week added to your weekly. Just to live, everything's become more expensive. And they say, the good thing is, guess what? People have stopped spending on leisure. So what does that tell you?
On leisure, on leisure?
Yeah. Recreation, leisure, and culture. So people can't take more holidays. They can't take more breaks. All their disposable income is going to servicing their mortgage and putting food on the table and making sure there's electricity in the house. Do you call that living, mate?
Well, no, not really. And then you're also worried, too, at the same time, that you're just going to keep nosediving. So there's, apart from having a roof over your head to live in at the moment, there's really nothing too rosy about that picture, is there?
Yeah, exactly right. That's what I'm saying. And I think about 6 or 8 months back, I said they will make it so hard for people. People just said, just take it all. Just give me a bloody UBI and let me just rent from you my own house.
Okay, so they'll gladly take that. In the end.
Yeah, but eventually it's coming to that because, as I just explained, you're on $115,000 median income. Your mortgage payments have gone from $48,000 to $84,000. And I said $115,000 median income. Again, I've highlighted so many times. Take first the government's take. That is the first thing that comes in. 30% of that is gone. If you're left with $75,000 or $80,000 and your mortgage payments are now $84,000, if you took a $1 million mortgage, how are you surviving? How are you putting food on the table? So obviously, non-performing loans are going to go up. And I've been reading this on a few other, let's just say, this is just me reading the data of the RBNZ website. They have a list of all the banks and their proportion and which banks have seen an uptick the most in their non-performing loans. From what I could see initially, and this is not me putting up a bank's name saying they're bad or anything. It is just the non-performing loans. In certain sections, I saw Rabobank and Heartland Bank were suffering with their non-performing loans the most. That could be obviously because Rabobank also helps the agricultural sector, and the agricultural sector is under a bit of pressure with all this woke global climate change and all that rubbish, which is being scaled back. But I was going through, I just want to highlight to readers something again, which I mentioned. You can see on the Reserve Bank of New Zealand's website that they create money out of thin air for mortgages. I think a couple of weeks back when he played my recording, it was Adrian Orr himself saying we create fictional confetti money, and thank God the people believe it. And he actually says, touch wood in the end. I looked at that post on X or prior Twitter.
Adrian Orr, he nervously said, touch wood at the end.
He does say touch wood at the end. So as I told you, it's just a confidence game. As more and more people realize this is nothing but confetti money, there's just a piece of paper that actually just says 50 on it, just the number 50 on it, and they keep the color standard. So everyone in New Zealand agrees it is 50 or 100.
Yeah.
Then everything happens. But I'll continue with what I was saying about Heartland. One of their, because their profits were down 23%. So now we're starting to see most banks' profits are starting moving backwards. Their profits were down 23%. And on one of their statements in this document of theirs, they said deposits and unsubordinate notes rank equally. So they rank equally and are unsecured. So they clearly, even on that say, deposits and unsecured notes, unsubordinated notes rank equally and unsecured. So if you think your deposit is your money, it ain't. I can't say this 10,000 times. It is pretty obvious. It even says it on the Reserve Bank of New Zealand's website. Just Google it and see if the money is yours, and it ain't yours. Because when you give it to the bank, you have lent it to the bank to do what they want to do with it. Your deposits are not yours. And unfortunately, New Zealand still does not have a government guarantee on bank deposits. Now, I was talking to a client about 2 weeks back before I flew off to Hong Kong. And he said, why is it bloody taking them so long? And I said, because they're playing a game here, right? Because if they really wanted a government guarantee deposits, they could come out tomorrow and say, as of tomorrow, 100,000 is guaranteed. They could pass that through legislation very quickly, but they want to talk about other things and not quickly push this through. In fact, I was looking at the RBNZ's website, and now they want to talk. They're creating these matrices where they're going to have a climate change agenda inbuilt into it, where if you're green and you have a certain credit rate, and they're trying to say that is for financial stability to make sure none of the banks collapse because of global warming or because of floods and climate events.
What a load of bollocks.
It is. But this is a bit of nudging, right? Because banks, I've worked in banks, and I can tell you, big commercial projects, you actually have to click whether the client, their industry codes, whether they're in mining, whether they do something with water infrastructure and all that kind of stuff, whether there'd be negative publicity if you lend to this business and if something goes wrong. So the banks already have these things in place. But the Reserve Bank, every Reserve Bank around the world, just like the European Reserve Bank, as ECB is trying to do, nudge people towards these socialist agendas so they lend less to, well, I wouldn't even call it fossil fuels, but get away from these businesses more towards solar power and all of that. But their plan is failing. As I said, people can see through it. BlackRock is backing off. There's a lot of companies that are losing a lot of revenue in America. So they're saying, we don't want to do this anymore. We're going to focus on shareholders and not stakeholders anymore, just like Klaus Schwab wanted us to do.
So I was just thinking as you're talking about that, is it possible that, with talk of climate affecting banking, that is some kind of convenient excuse for banks being in a very tough position. So you can say, well, climate change has brought this about. Nothing we could do. In fact, it's your fault for screwing up the climate. You know, you can just kind of hear it being given as some sort of plausible deniability reason for why your banks are slowly collapsing,
Well, that too.
And the average person, because they believe the narrative, saying, that sounds right. That's right.
Yeah, because it can't connect the dots, right? Like, even with these interest rates going up and inflation, they're blaming it on COVID and they're blaming it on the flood. So obviously they're saying this climate change. Look, we had a flood in New Zealand about a year back, the storms and all that kind of stuff. They're saying, look, it's because of climate change.
We don't even need Farzan to point to actual events. All you got to do is just rehash the news headlines, which have been over dramatizing all the weather, So you don't even have to have real events anymore.
No. And the whole thing is it's wolf in sheep's clothing, mate. This is how they get the gullible. It's also understanding what generations they're targeting. That's why you see people who are protesting about these climate agendas of the young people who go and spray things on little monuments and Mona Lisa and stuff because they think they're saving the world. They just don't understand they're gullible and they've just bought into this psychological warfare that's being played out. At least their parents are smarter and some of them can see it, especially in America. Well, most people are now
You
starting to
hope.
see it and people are going rushing into the red states. It's not going to be fun. It's not going to be fun, but the what I keep telling, there is light at the end of the tunnel because this system that's been in place for about 100 years is collapsing. And now people will start waking up and say, how is this beneficial to me? Why is my government always doing the opposite of what's good for citizens? As you can see, what's happening in Germany, biggest industrialized economy being easily shut down. Japan, Germany, everyone's in recessions already. In New
Not
Zealand, I
only
can tell
that,
you.
but now it, with leaked tapes, it seems colluding on attacking Russian territory assets,
On purpose, yes.
risking actually being nuked off the face of the earth if they're not careful. I mean, what's going on?
Well, that's what they want. They will create a false flag. They will create a false flag because Russia is just not taking the bait, mate. Russia is not attacking because they can see we were not doing anything, but Russia has kind of bombed this part or that part, and that's why we kind of had to go in. There's this Minsk agreement since 2014, and if they wanted to really end the war, they could end it within 2 days. Literally, just agree to what the agreement was in 2014, where Angela Merkel had actually signed on. And she's come out clearly, I think last year, in one of the interviews in German media, and she said, oh, we just did that to give Ukraine time to build up their army reserves. And there was also a Ukraine head of army who kind of revolted against Zelensky, and he was replaced very conveniently. Yeah, so there's all this stuff going on. The truth is coming out, but the whole thing is if the financial system's collapsing, they can't say we screwed up. So they have to blame it on war. They have to blame it on Russia. They last year had frozen Russia's, I think, 368 billion, don't quote me the exact amount,
Yeah, it's
in
about
foreign
that.
reserves. Yeah. And now they're saying we'll actually take it and give it to Ukraine.
Steal
So
it.
it's not freezing. Yeah, it is stealing. It is daylight stealing, right? Just while we're on this topic, I want to mention something which most people will not know this. But do you know when America's handing all this money to Ukraine and stuff? Ukraine had to transfer some of their gold to the US. Most people don't know this.
Sorry, say that
Yeah.
again. The what?
Ukraine's gold has been shipped off to the US.
Oh, okay. So it's like a
Again, yeah,
cash
now
for
we're going to
gold
bigger
kind of thing.
geopolitical, macroeconomic things. But also, when they attacked Iraq, Saddam Hussein's gold was the first thing that was shipped off to the
Oh,
US. So,
they're robbing the gold, are they?
yeah, I'll leave it at that, mate. So
I
this is an
had
article.
I had Winston Peters on this program at the start of the week, Monday. And among things that I asked him about issues was the latest money that's being sent for some sort of aid to Ukraine, 26 million. Okay, it's not a huge amount in the scheme of things in global terms, but you know, for a country that's finding it tough, there are better uses for it. I asked him what it would be spent on and will there be accountability for line item of what that money's spent on. He didn't have a clue.
No, it doesn't, because this is all backdoor deals. And I'm telling you, because America's in a hole right now, giving money to Ukraine because of the southern border and people coming through Mexico through to Texas, the European countries are trying to just chuck in a little bit just to keep it alive. Because what America was doing was pretty much paying pensions. This money is pretty much paying all the government pensions and salaries in Ukraine because Ukraine is broke.
Because it would collapse if you don't pay that. The whole place
It
would
would
just collapse,
literally.
implode, wouldn't it?
And the whole war would end, right? So they cannot let the war end because it's been going for 2 years. And so they have to keep funding it. Why is New Zealand paying money to Ukraine? And in the bigger scheme of things, it's such a tiny amount. So it's not about how much you're giving,
Well,
it's
actually,
a
it's
sign.
100 million cumulatively now. We've put in 100 mil up till now.
What are we doing? What are we doing? Why are we
Well,
in
we
that
don't know. We
zone?
have no clue. We have no
It's
clue.
virtue signaling. It's virtue signaling. Maybe 1 million or 25 million. It's virtue signaling that we're on this side. And as I said, we're going from a unipolar world where America was the head to a multipolar world, there will be an Eastern Bloc and there will be a Western Bloc. And unfortunately, yes, New Zealand and Australia have their business ties with China and the Asian, Southeast Asian countries. But on the military front, they're joining this AUKUS and all that stuff. You said Winston Peters. I hope he's part of the current government. And I read something where Winston Peters was heading off to India and Southeast Asia to try and drum up some business for New Zealand as well. I would love to speak to him. I would love to speak to him to try and help our country. How to get into these markets? Not only can I speak their languages, I understand the macroeconomic factors here as well. In fact, one of your listeners, I think once, about 3 months back, it said, I wish Winston Peters gets education portfolio so Farzan can go out to our schools and teach the young kids the real economics. Yeah. I'd seen that comment from one of your listeners. If people can reach out to me and do that, I'd love to do that because this is giving back to the community, mate. And if we genuinely want to help our communities, it starts with financial education. As I said, I've been talking about this for 5 years. Money's created out of thin air. And now Edwin is, select parliamentary committee saying,
they told us to be money.
They said it themselves. So reach out to the right people. Why isn't someone reaching out to me and saying, hey, this is what the country is? But as I told you, this is all, I'm not directing this as Winston Peters, but even when National came in, they said, we'll repeal this and we'll repeal that. They repealed the petrol excise tax duty or whatever that is. But on the other hand, they've increased your registrations by $50.
So more money. That weekly the outgoings go up by even more. Thank you so much.
Whether it comes from door one or whether it comes from door three, it doesn't matter. And in 2027, they've kind of then said the duty will go up. So it's pretty much same, but different. Yep. The book has a different cover, but the inside is the same. So you just got to understand our political system is about to break down over the next so many years, and people will realize, and I hope we can go to direct democracy like Switzerland has, where we can vote on stuff local, rather than our yep, representatives telling us, are we going to do this? And then saying, because of this, we changed what we were doing. So anyways, moving away from politics.
Well, I've got a letter here. I want to get to the Reserve Bank balance sheet too, because that's quite interesting. But we had an email coming regarding The Great Taking. Now, you suggested I read that book. I haven't read it yet, but I kind of understand the premise of it. So Anon's written in. Can I just read you this quickly and get your response?
Yeah, absolutely, mate.
Okay. Hi, this is for Farzan on the topic of The Great Taking. I've seen it mentioned that any security is a fair game. To secure your house, this would include paying off your mortgage. However, when I paid off my mortgage, I found that the bank prefers to keep the account open at zero balance. As I understand it, the discharge mortgage means the bank technically still has a security interest in your paid off home. Can you please ask Farzan to comment on the risk of an undischarged mortgage for a paid off home if the bank gets into trouble? Cheers. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I've mentioned this. When we speak to my clients, we look at the holistic picture and all that kind of stuff. So this is definitely something that comes up, and it's a good question. Having worked in banking also, let me explain this a bit slowly. When you take a mortgage, let's say I have an $800,000 loan against $1 million property, till I pay off the last dollar, it's fair game. I can default and they can take my property away from me. Now, the gentleman's question out there, or gentle lady's question out there, I don't know.
Gentleman in this case, yeah. Or anonymous.
If you've paid off your mortgage and the balance is zero, think about a debit and credit balance sheet of a bank. So it is still holding your property there on its balance sheet. So it gets to prop up its assets because your property is still sitting there, but it doesn't actually have money being utilized on the other end because you don't have a loan anymore. Now, sometimes it's just a zero balance, but I remember during my days when I was banking, I was actively told to promote, hey, don't release your mortgage. Don't release it. Let it just sit there. You don't owe us anything anyways. You're not paying interest on it. Just let that $500,000 line of credit sit there. Because if you need something, because if you need something in the future, if you ever need to buy a distressed asset, someone wants to buy a cheap car, sell a cheap car because they're in liquidity trouble, you have that money, cheap money, to just go out and immediately buy it because it's a cash offer, or another house. So that's the incentive for you to leave it on there. But the whole point is, Even if it's a zero balance, it sits on the bank's balance sheet. Now, if this gentleman has read the book, The Great Taking, not only does he mention The Great Taking book more focuses on your bonds and shares. People think they own their shares. They don't own their shares. Your broker owns the shares. Just like your deposits are sitting with a bank, your shares are sitting with your brokerage. If your brokerage goes under because one of its derivatives bets goes bad, they will be wound up. And in this book, he clearly says how the exchanges have been centralized. Just while we're on this topic, I'll give you one simple example. I'm in India. I don't have a share portfolio in India, but most of my friends from university who I catch up with from time to time, they're like, oh, my DMAT account's been going up this much. My DMAT account's been going this much. And I Googled what DMAT in India meant. Literally, people who had share certificates in paper have been all asked to move electronically. And the word DMAT itself means dematerialization, which...
Oh. Right,
which he himself has clearly said in the book. They try and dematerialize all assets because it was a paper claim. Now that there's no paper claim, you're just a beneficial owner to the asset. So look at your brokerage firm. Your shares are sitting there. On a screen, you can see what your share portfolio is, but you're the beneficial owner. So when they collapse, so if they get sucked into this collateral default, your shares and your bonds are taken. Just like if a bank defaults in New Zealand right now with no government guarantee, your deposits will be gone. And I clearly mentioned last year as well, your deposits will be gone, anything over, even if they bring in the 100,000, because New Zealand's one of those countries, unlike Europe and the European Union, where they actually put the depositors priority over every other asset. Why is our government or the RBNZ not doing that? We have explicitly said you will not get priority. So you already know what the bloody plan is. Why would you hold too much money in the bank account? Now, again, this is just my opinion based on me connecting all the dots and seeing the writing on the wall. So this thing. Now, I'm not giving financial advice. So the gentleman who's asked this question, yes, if he wants a line of credit, he has to leave it there, because the bank ain't going to give him a line of credit without that mortgage sitting there as collateral.
But while it's there, it's on their books, and that could be taken away if they go under.
Of course. So if you do not see yourself having the need to borrow against that house, then kindly go back to your bank, ask them to release the mortgage, go to your solicitor, ask them to do a title search on your property, make sure there's no bank mortgage on it, make sure there's no caveats on it, and then, as I tell my clients, print out a couple of copies in paper showing exactly that. Now, if you have paper proof that you never, there was no mortgage on it and there's nothing on it, and get a letter from the bank's lawyers saying they have no interest in this property anymore whatsoever. So if you want to de-risk more, yes, take it off. Okay, no point just letting them have a charge over your mortgage, because they do have a charge over your title. And if you're not using the facility, bloody get rid of it.
Yeah.
Yes, if in the future, if you need money, people say, oh, I'll have to go to a solicitor. Yeah, it's worth having a cost of $4,000, $5,000, $7,000 to remortgage your house if you need it, than just having sitting there ready to be taken.
Yeah.
Is what I'd say.
Okay. Just to end up on the latest balance sheet from the Reserve Bank, you've had a look at that. I mean, it's all figures to me. I think a couple stand out to you. What does it tell you about the status of the Reserve Bank? And I think we're talking figures released on the 15th. The 15th of Feb, with a new set of figures coming out in about a week from now.
As I mentioned last year, and I just brought this to your attention right now, and I've sent you the link, because what I want to show people, first of all, is I had mentioned the Reserve Bank is upside down. So even the Reserve Bank, who helps other banks and create this money out of thin air, is broke. When I say broke, assets equals liabilities plus equity. So if any accountants are listening on this, their total assets sit at $96.5 billion. So obviously it has to balance, but their liabilities are $91.399. So the net assets, equity, the equity, just think about a bank having equity, your house having equity in the property.
Yep.
They're saying their net assets or the equity position is $5.14 billion. Now, that's all great, but when people actually dig in and look at the asset side, as I've shown you now, and you're looking at it, so you can confirm what I'm saying, they have the securities of the LSAP program of 36.3, but because that's underwater, because the interest rates have gone up, as I said, bonds lose value, there's a $5.5 billion loss, which the Crown has given them an indemnity for 5.5. So if the net assets is 5.1 billion, and without this Crown indemnity of 5.5 billion, they broke.
Wowza. Okay, broke. Well, there's something to mull over till the next time we talk. And maybe when you come back, Farzan, we can talk about The Great Taking, the book The Great Taking. All right, if people want to get in touch, what's the best way to do that, Farzan?
Oh, yeah. The website is successsimplified.life. Read through the page, flick me an email with a short query or something. I do not make initial phone calls. I'll flick you a generic email.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then we could take it from there, because I get quite a few emails, mate. Thank you.
All right, Farzan, great to catch up again. Look forward to connecting again when you're back in the country and talking about The Great Taking. It sounds, I'm looking forward to that one. So thanks for coming back on, joining the Money Dots on Money Talks, Farzan. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Most welcome, mate. Cheers. Thank you. Bye.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.